Good morning, and thank you for standing by. All lines will be in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. To ask your question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn the meeting over to Dan Fleming. Sir, you may begin.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for calling in. This morning, we have Larry Green with us from the NetView Development Lab. And Larry's going to be going over the new enhancements in version 5, release 4, which goes GA today. So, Larry, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Okay, thanks, Dan. Well, good morning to everyone, or good afternoon, depending on where you are. So I'm glad to be with you. As Dan said, I'll be talking about the new release of NetView. If you look on slide 2, this is, in fact, a brand new release, NetView version 5, release 4. It's generally available as of today. So it is brand new. Going to slide 3. This release has three major themes to it, major functional enhancements. We aim to ensure that NetView itself remains functionally superior, providing the best value to our customers. Product portfolio integration. We continue to integrate with other products in the Tivoli portfolio to provide for correlated management of all aspects of the enterprise. And then enterprise integration. We integrate NetView's management capabilities with those of products in the distributed arena in order to allow for unified management of both environments. Now, this new release takes as its basic prereq ZOS 1.9. We're going to slide 4. Key functions in the NetView product itself are enhanced to offer additional capabilities. These include IP management, which includes OSA management and other comm server functionalities, and expanded tracing capabilities. Then we've also added broader Sysplex and DeviPA management to begin to allow customers to view and manage a Sysplex as a single entity rather than just a collection of systems. And then also selected core functions, as well as enhancements in usability and product navigation, which will help with customer resource requirements. Now, going on to the next slide, slide 5, OSA Trace. And by the way, I'm going to defer discussion of OSA topology till we get to the section on Sysplex management. So on slide 5, OSA Trace, this supports the tracing of OSA packets with OSA Inta, the OSA Express 2 Network Traffic Analyzer. OSA Inta is only supported by the OSA Express 2 feature. Simple OSA Express does not support OSA Inta. So examples of the kind of data that we can collect here, from the Ethernet header, we can get source and destination MAC addresses, the Ethernet type, the VLAN tag, the LLC fields. We can get IPv4 and V6 protocol headers, ARP packages, SNA transmission headers, direction flags. We can get a discard code. So if a customer finds that OSA is discarding packets for some reason, they can look at the discard code and find out why. The syntax and the behavior of the OSA trace is similar to the packet trace function, so I'm going to be discussing those kind of together. Going to the next slide, expanded packet trace. NetView introduced support for formatted real-time packet capture back in release 5.2. In the new release, we expand that function to make it easier to use and better integrated. We start with a new command to allow for the easy management of packet traces and the display of that data. So going to slide 7, The screenshots that I'm going to show here are all 3270. The same information, for the most part, is also available in the Tivoli Enterprise port, the TEP. So on this screen, you see a list of the stacks that are known to NetView on both the local and remote domains, along with an indicator of the status of the traces on those stacks. To go and look at one of these stacks, you would select it by moving the cursor to its line and then press Enter. So that will lead you to slide 8. Here you could select either packet trace or OSA trace. Select packet trace to view the packets for the stack in this domain, or OSA trace to view the OSA trace data. So going to the next slide, slide 9. Now for ZOS 1.9 or higher, the ports column will show the new port number along with the older source port and destination port. The port num is meant to supersede source port and destination port. So if it's set, then any values defined for source port and destination port will be ignored. You can see on this slide we have an indicator showing that packet tracing is active. We show that NetView is collecting the traced packets. We indicate the NetView domain and the ZOS level. Using PF4 down at the bottom, the operator could stop the collection of packets, stop packet tracing. From here, you can view existing packets that have already been collected, if there are any. To select links of interest, you would put the number 3 for viewing packets in the next to the interface or link that you're interested in. You could filter by protocol and or address and ports from here. Then hit Enter, and that will take you to the next slide. I'm going to show you first, there's a similar screen for OSA trace control. Here you can select the OSA port of interest. Again, we indicate that OSA packet collection is active. We show you that NetView is collecting the packets. Again, the NetView domain and the ZOS level. PF4 again allows you to stop collection of OSA packets. Then you can again select the OSA that you're interested in tracing. You can apply filters using PF9. Now, going to look at those filters, you have a number of categories that you can filter on: protocol, Ethernet type, port, and so on. Though I should say that the criteria you specify here identify the packets that you do want to see, not the ones that you want to filter out. You can filter by address. It's PF8. So if you use that, we'll go to the next slide, slide 12, and you could enter up to 8 IPv4 addresses or IPv6 addresses. Now, going to the next slide, we're back looking at packet trace options. And in the interest of time, from here on, I'm just going to show packet trace screens, but there are similar screens that would apply to OSA packets just as well. Now, on this screen, this panel shows all of the base format packet command options. You have the name of the interface that was selected on the previous packet trace control panel. You can select the criteria that you're interested in here. for the maximum number of records, if you select last, then that will show the most recent 100 packets. If you select first, that will show the oldest 100 packets. And so then using PF4, you can view a summary list of the packets that meet the criteria you've selected. Going to the next slide, we can see that summary view. PF7 and 8 allow you to scroll up and down. PF11 will let you scroll to the right for more information. You can use PF5 to refresh the data space and get an update on packets. Now, to go and view the detailed data for a particular packet, you just move the cursor to whichever packet you're interested in and use PF4 to go to the detail display. So going to the next slide, we now see a NetView window view of the detailed data for the requested packet. And that includes both header information as well as the payload information. You can use the window PF keys to scroll up and down and otherwise navigate through the data here. So going to the next slide now, we'll look at managing packet collection. Slide 17. So now we're back on the main selection screen. Again, this shows that NetView's collection of packets is active. To stop or change that, you would use PF10 to go to the packets management screen. That's on the next slide, slide 18. This displays the command control options. Now, only the relevant options are displayed here depending on the current state of the trace. This one shows that stop and stop call and purge are available, and that's because packet collection is active, as shown in the upper right. If packet collection is inactive, then only the start and define options would be available. Now, the option shown here, stop, first means stop collecting packets, and any packets that have already been collected are no longer available for viewing. Stop call means to stop collecting packets, but the packets that have already been collected are still available for viewing. And then purge would allow you to delete packets that meet the criteria that you specify. Going to the next slide, we'll look at commands that can be issued from the packet summary. So going to slide 20, this is the summary display. Now, if you select a particular packet, you can use PF9 to bring up a pop-up window. That's shown on the next slide, 21. And you can see here we have several options available. Commands are applied to the IP resources that are involved in the selected packet. If you're going to issue an SNMP command, then RAdder means to send the command to the external address. Stack means to issue the command to the local IP stack. Item 3 in the command list is the hostnames option. That performs a get host by address lookup for both IP addresses that are involved in the connection. So we're going to pick selection 1 here, ping, to ping the resources involved in the connection. And we'll go to the next slide, and we can see the results from that ping. These are returned in a window. So going to the next slide now, extended options, on slide 24. We're back to the basic display packets control screen that we saw before. But now if we want to get more granular in requesting packets, You can, from here, you can request specific detailed packet data. So we use PF8 to go to the extended options screen, and that's shown on slide 25. The defaults are set as we come into the screen. You can change the options as needed, and then press PF4 to go and see the detail display resulting. And that's on slide 26. So there's a great deal of flexibility, as you can see, in granularity in displaying the packets that meet only your needs. You don't have to deal with a bunch of extraneous stuff. Slide 27, we'll look at modifying traces. On slide 28, from the main selection screen, you can change your packet trace options by either modifying an existing trace or adding a new trace or stopping a trace. So let's say that we want to add a UDP trace for a TCP/IP link that's shown to go along with the TCP trace that we already have. So to do that, you would type 1 in the command field over on the left, and then you would overtype under the protocol column where it initially said TCP, you would overtype that with UDP and press Enter, and you get a message that says the command vary packet trace completed successfully. So we've now added a UDP trace in addition to the TCP trace that we already had going. Okay, going to the next slide now, we'll start looking at Sysplex management. Broader Sysplex and DVIPA management are added to, as I said, let customers start to view and manage their Sysplexes as a single entity rather than just a collection of systems. So on slide 30, with this new release, we now provide consolidated Sysplex management, including both topology and automation. We use ZOS XCF services to create a master net view and backup net views to allow for failover. Now I'm going to give you kind of an overview of the function here. At 1 o'clock Eastern Time, we have a deep dive into this function that Pam McLean is going to do. She'll go into much more detail than I will here. So I just want to remind you of that so you can come back at 1 o'clock. This function gives improved notification to changes in the DVIPA environment in Sysplexes. We provide Sysplex topology views through NMC, the NetView Management Console. The data is also available in the Tivoli Enterprise portal, and in some cases there are links to a couple of the OmegaMon products. And then the data is also available in the 3270 console. So going to slide 31, this is a simple Sysplex illustrated here with three systems in it. At this point, initially, the NetView that's running in Plex 1B is the master. So he's collecting data on the other systems that are in the Sysplex. Now, if that master becomes inactive for some reason, either planned or unplanned, then NetView 1A in Plex 1A has been designated as the backup. So he will take over and assume management of the Sysplex. He will discover the other elements of the Sysplex, and data will be forwarded to him for management from that point. And that's all done automatically. There's no requirement that the operator step in and do this manually. So going to slide 32, we discover quite a number of things by default. The SysFlex itself, the coupling facility, the various ZOS images in the Plex, the NetView instances, the TCP/IP stack, and the IP subplexes are all discovered by default. Optionally, we can go on and discover interfaces, telnet servers and ports, OSA and hypersockets, DVIPA, so on. When I say OSA here, that includes interfaces, VLANs, ports, and the adapters themselves. DVIPA includes DVIPA definition and status. It includes SysFlex distributors, distributed DVIPA targets, DVIPA server health and connections, and some other things. So it's quite extensive. We'll go to slide 33. Monitoring can begin at the very highest level, that is, the entire SysFlex itself. Here, in this slide, the aggregate object represents the entire SysFlex. So we could double-click on it to drill down and see what makes up this SysFlex, and that's shown on the next slide, 34. This SysFlex is made up of two systems and a coupling facility. So we could continue to drill down on through the aggregate resources to see more and more detail and eventually get to something as detailed as we see on the next slide, slide 35. This view shows the full hierarchy from the hypersockets interface up through the owning links, the IP stacks, the systems, and so on, all the way up to the CPC, along with the status for each of those elements. We go to slide 36. Information on hypersockets is similarly available through the Tivoli Enterprise portal. This information is available only for ZOS 1.11 COM server or later. And the data collection for this information does require the use of ROTM, our Resource Object Data Manager. Now, going to slide 37, there's a similar view that's available for OSAs. If ROTM is used, then similar data will also be available in the TEP workspaces. If ROTM is not used, then those TEP workspaces will have no data. Slide 38, here is the corresponding TEP workspace showing information on the OSA port. Slide 39, the ROTM prereq that I mentioned does pertain to OSA topology and OSA workspaces in the TEP, but it does not pertain to OSA trace. OSA trace is not needed or does not require the use of ROTM. Slide 40, we also monitor telnet servers. Here we see the telnet server configuration and status workspace in the TEP. Similar information is also available in the NMC. Now, in this case, this example, we could notice that the server, the last one in the list at the bottom, is inactive and it has no connections, zero connections. So what do you do about it? Well, from here, you could quiesce the port and then resume it. So if we do that and then we go to the next slide to see the results, so after we've done that, we see that now the server is active and it does have connections. We're going to slide 42 now. The NetView Applications workspace shows a list of the NetView instances that are managing this SysFlex, showing the role of each, whether it's a master or backup. Here we call it MCAP, meaning Master Capable. Their XCF groups, CPU and storage usage, their status, and various other information. So we're monitoring the net views in the Sysplex as well. Slide 43, we will ship a compatibility APAR for net releases NetView 5.2 and 5.3 to allow those NetViews to notify the primary NetView 5.4 of their existence. So we can then discover their Sysplex environment. This APAR doesn't cause any problems when a NetView 5.4 is not in the picture. It just allows the 5.3 and 5.2 releases to participate in this Sysplex management. We use XCF, as I mentioned here, for signaling between the different NetViews in the Sysplex. We do not use it for communicating large volumes of data between the NetViews. Slide 44, this is just an indication, really, of how much we're using the TEP. In NetView 5.3, we provided quite a number of workspaces. You can see them listed here. Going to slide 45, we've expanded that quite considerably with the addition of a number of other workspaces. We'll look at a couple of those. Going to slide 46, this workspace displays the health statistics for unhealthy application servers that reside on DDVIPA targets. Now, unhealthy is defined as one or more of the conditions that are shown here on the right. The workload manager weight equals 0, port health percent less than 90%, server acceptance rate, abnormal transaction rate. These are the defaults that we ship. Customers can change them if they like. The bar graphs show the port health percent for each DVIPA and DVIPA port, the server acceptance percent for each DVIPA and port, and the abnormal transaction rate for each DVIPA and port. Going to the next slide, this workspace shows health statistics for a specific application server over time. It contains charts showing the port health percent for that server over time, the application transaction percent over time, and the server acceptance percent over time. So it has a good way for customers to see trends as they develop. Going to slide 48, so say, for example, that you think you may have a problem with a Sysplex distributor workload balancing for FTP port 21. This workspace shows four rows for the FTP D1 application server. They have four DVIPA targets that are listed here, and yet, in fact, connections are being distributed to only two systems, as indicated by the number of active and delta connections here. So we have a good way to spot problems, for example, in server distribution workload that we see here. Now, going to slide 49. What I've described as Sysplex management is, in fact, not limited to just a Sysplex, but the function allows for forwarding data to a master NetView from NetViews that are in other Sysplexes or that are just independent. So this allows an enterprise-wide view of data for several Sysplexes through the NMC or the TEP. And as I note here, the ROTM that's at the master NetView is the one that's used as the enterprise-wide data cache. Okay, slide 50. We'll start looking at some of the enhancements to core functionality in NetView. First one of those will be automation of SMF30 records. So going on to slide 52, this allows NetView to track and automatically process SMF30 records. Those records are cut by ZOS for job and job step termination and some other reasons, but those are the ones of primary interest here. Now, this function we have also shipped in NetView 5.3 via an APAR that I've listed the number here. So on slide 53, we kind of see the structure. ZOS provides an exit that gives access to several different SMF records, including type 30. NetView now provides a sample exit for that, which will drive selected type 30 records across to a PPI receiver in the NetView address space. It includes associated description about what records we select and how to customize. This PPI approach allows all the common data as plain text while also exposing the original record in case the customer ever needs to see it. Now, we provide a new command, CNMSMF3R, that's shown here. Its purpose is to run on a dedicated autotask and sit there and wait for SMF30 records and then process and automate them. DSI SMF3F is a new command whose its purpose is to be invoked by the CNM SMF3R sample to format the BNH874I message, and we'll see that in just a moment. This DSI command will be maintained and shipped in two different forms. One as a regular NetView command ready to use. The other will be as a sample. We'll call it CNMSMF3F, which customers can edit themselves and assemble and then use it on top of the default one that we ship. Now, this CNMSMF3A item that's shown here in the automation table, it's a placeholder sample where customers would specify the actual actions that they want to take in response to a particular SMF30 record. Now, if we go to slide 54, we can see this BNH874I message that I mentioned. This is a two-line message. It's created by the sample we saw on the previous slide when an SMF30 record is received. It's intended for use in automation. The second line consists of the SMF30 record itself, and it is available to automation, but it's not displayed or logged. Now, some of the information that's contained in this message, there's a lot of stuff here, but just to point out a few things, there's the program name, so you can see what program was it that terminated. The step name, the step completion code, the abend reason code. So if a job does abend, this provides the capability to deal with it through automation. It's not necessary for an operator to discover the fact that it abended, then find out what was the abend code, interpret that, what do you do about this type of abend. All that can be handled now through NetView automation. Okay, going on, support for long password phrases on slide 56. This function is added in support of RACF changes that were made back in ZOS 1.9. And we will now allow up to 100 characters in password phrases. And I'll mention password phrase is, in fact, the formal term that's used by RACF. You sometimes may hear long password or passphrase or long passphrase. Those are just some of the casual terms that are used as synonyms. Now, the term password, just used by itself, still implies a 1-to-8 character alphanumeric password, and the password rules have not changed. So here, valid characters are A to Z, alphabetic characters, upper and lower case, numeric characters, national characters, punctuation, even blanks. Now, this applies only to staff-based password, passphrase checking. It does not affect NetView internal password checking, and it does not affect NNTs either. So going to the next slide, 57, you can see on the NetView login screen we've expanded the password area to allow for these longer passwords. Going on, we'll look at command revision now. Slide 59. We've had for some time a function we called MVS Command Management. This new function supersedes that. It allows customers to identify and shield sensitive or complex commands or synonyms. It allows for the revision of command text only. There's no other attributes that can be modified. Things like user authorization cannot be changed. Commands that are trapped can either be changed. As I mentioned, the text can be changed. They can be rejected, or they can be transferred to NetView for further processing. When a command is modified through command revision, it's then sent out again over the SSI for actual execution. Going to slide 60. Now, when might you want to use command revision? Well, here's a simple little example. Say that operators occasionally shut down a process before it completes creation of a checkpoint. So you could use the command revision table to transfer the shutdown command to NetView, where we could then issue a WTOR to the same console that the command came from. The operator there would then have to verify that the command or the checkpoint before the command would be allowed to proceed. Slide 61, command revision table is similar to the message revision table. It also runs in the NetView SSI. For audit purposes, we will issue a command or issue a message when a command is revised, showing both the before and after, the original and the revised versions. Also, if an unauthorized command revision is attempted, we'll issue a message. We provide a sample, CNMSPRT1, so customers can take that as a basis and construct their own command revision. Slide 62 shows a bit of the flows, the structure that's involved. Like the message revision specifications, the command revision specs are also in a member in DSI PARM, so they're under the control of the NetView operator. They don't have to ask a ZOS sysprog to change something for them. We have had in the past the revised message command that was used for loading the message revision table. We now introduce a simple revise command that can deal with both message revision and command revision. So if we go on to slide 63. As I mentioned, the revise message command is now deprecated. Revise supports both message and command revision. There's also a test mode that customers can use to see what would happen with the command revision specs they've entered. We'll issue a message showing how the command revision would have behaved, but it won't actually execute anything. Customers can define their message and command revision specifications in the same member, and we will separate them appropriately. Because we've done it that way, there's no need for customers to make changes to the definition statements that they have in the NetView style sheet, so long as they haven't changed the name of their definition member or something like that. Now, there is one special consideration I should mention. In order to trap JES commands that customers may want to modify, they do need to establish a command exit in MPF to deal with those JES commands. And we provide a sample exit for that. If its only purpose is to deal with those JES commands and being sure that, that they get trapped and sent to NetView. Going to slide 64, the command revision language is similar to that used for message revision. There are upon statements and when and otherwise and revise statements, and they have similar uses. So, for example, you could trap a command based on the name of the console that it came from, or the value of the first token, or you could have a couple of upons and then say for all other commands, or you could just say for all commands do XYZ. You can look at things like the ASID that the command came from or the job name. So there's a great many things to allow a selection of commands that you want to modify. Going to slide 65, what actions can you take? Well, you can revise the command. As I mentioned, you can only modify the text, none of the other attributes of the command. You can create the text for a WTO, which would be issued immediately back to the console that issued the command. You can send the command over to NetView. This will suspend it from the MVS command stream and send it over to NetView for further actions there. Now, you are limited to one command revision table per LPAR. Okay, going on, now look at the NetView Web Services Gateway, slide 67. This allows products and distributed applications that have the need to access NetView data. It's done through industry standards to create an open interface. Provides services and data independent of the platform or the environment or application language, whatever, that the request is coming from. We've implemented it as a SOAP server. And unlike the NetView web application today, it does not require WebSphere or any other middleware to use. So slide 68, what kind of data can you get using this new gateway? Well, pretty much any data that NetView stores, anything that's in ROTM, TCP/IP data, Sysflex data, you can execute commands. All of the data is text-based. The flows are designed to be implemented in XML. So the requesting application will need to structure their request as an XML request that will come into NetView, and we will parse through that and execute the request. Slide 69 just illustrates the flow. The flow from the distributed client up to NetView can be either HTTP or HTTPS, So it can be a secure transaction. Speaking of security, slide 70, authentication, authorization, and transport. The user ID and password authentication and command authorization are all done using existing NetView security functions, so something that customers are familiar with. I mentioned transport. The entire exchange can be conducted over a secure network connection using SSL, or can be done using ComServer's ATTLS function. Slide 71, just a summary of the features offered by the gateway. You can execute any NetView line mode command. For external messages, we can actually provide some automation services. The transaction can be done either secure or non-secure. There's a WSL file that we provide for generating either static or dynamic proxy clients. You can use the NetView style sheet for customizing. It's enabled for IPv6. There's a number of debug tools that we provide. Multiple instances of the server can be used for load balancing or security or other customization reasons if needed. It can act as a basic HTTP server. As I mentioned, it supports SSL and can also be implemented using ATTLS for security. Going on, mentioning the NetView, the NLDM PIU trace, slide 73. This provides the capability to set an operator profile to display PIU timestamps in a specific format, either, for example, like month, day, year, or day, year, hour, or hour, minute, second, and so on. So much more granularity. Okay, next slide. Looking at product portfolio integration. And going on, we've expanded our discovery library adapter. NetView shipped a discovery library adapter, or DLA, I think first in NetView 5.3. The existing DLA extracts data from ROADM about IP-managed elements, routers and bridges and switches and so on, and their relationships, networks and subnets and so on. Extracts all that data, formats it, and transports it to CMDB, where it's available for use by TADM, for correlation with information from other products for a very broad-based view of system and network resources. Now, this DLA is expanded in NetView 5.4 with the addition of data on Sysplex resources. So both Sysplex resources and IP-related resources will now all be available from NetView in CMDB. Going on now to slide 78, enterprise integration. Integration with Tivoli NetView Manager IP Edition provides for the updated discovery of IP resources and management by NetView. Now we are integrating with ITNM, Tivoli Network Manager, to provide transition from the distributed NetView product, Tivoli NetView. We've had integration with that product for many years. It is being retired, superseded by ITNM, the Tivoli Network Manager. So all customers of NetView 5.4 will be entitled to a free download of a limited license version of ITNM. Now, through integration with ITNM, NetView will get data on Layer 3 IP resources, resources that are one hop, so to speak, out from ZOS. And together, these will allow an enterprise-wide IP availability management. Data on the distributed resources that we get from ITNM will be stored in ROTM. From there, topology views will be available in NMC, and I've got some examples in a couple of slides here. So going on to the next slide, I'll just mention there are two components to the MSM ITNM function. One is on the NetView host, and that's installed as part of the base NetView for ZOS installation. There's also a distributed component that runs with ITNM. So that's kind of illustrated here. Now, eventually, as I said, the distributed NetView product is being retired. So that agent will go away. Going to the next slide, I mentioned some screenshots, some examples here. This is slide 80, shows a couple of examples. The first one, some subnets that were discovered by ITNM and reported to NetView. On the right, we have systems that are located within that selected subnet. Going to slide 81, we see details on resources that are located within a selected system. And then, depending on the resource that's selected, different commands can be issued from the NMC console. Users can easily modify the command set to include custom commands if they need to. Going to slide 82, we have an event viewer that provides events for a selected resource. And slide 83, where it's feasible, data that's collected via ITNM is correlated with data from our Sysplex management function. So you have just an illustration of that here. Okay, that is a quick summary of some of the major functions that are in the new release of NetView. Following on in the last few slides in this deck, there are indication of sources for additional information, webinars, the SystemZ Advisor, some classes that are coming up. Now, some of these have not yet been updated for NetView 5.4, for the new release. The classes, for example, I don't have information on 5.4 classes. I'm sure those will be updated and will be posted on the NetView customer forum when they are available. So at this point, I guess I'd like to open up for questions if there are any.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be announced prior to asking your question. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, if you do have a question, please press star 1. One moment, please.
Am I live?
You are.
I'll ask a question just to kick things off. And basically on the command revision, I'm wondering if a customer has implemented the command management at the 5.3 level, is that still going to work as is in 5.4, or do they need to migrate their command management to command revision at the time they migrate from 5.3 to 5.4?
If they have implemented the older MVS command management already, it will still work. We didn't disable it. We do recommend, though, that they migrate to the new command revision just because it's a more robust function, easier to maintain, and so on.
Sure, yeah. Thanks. But at least they don't have to do it all at the same time.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
At this time, I'm not showing any questions. Once again, if you do have a question, it is star one.
Okay, well, if there are no questions, then I thank you for your time this morning or this afternoon, and hope this has been informative for you.
No questions means you did an excellent job.
Well, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. All parties may disconnect at this time.